Hello friends. I was going to say it's been a while, but it hasn't at all. It's only been a matter of days. We were here on Monday. We are back again. It me, Bethany Rutter, and I'm here with my good friend and business partner.
It me, Alice Slater.
How are you doing today, my friend?
Oh, I'm good, thank you. I've had a little pub lunch and I'm loving life.
What'd you have for lunch?
I had a veggie burger.
Nice. I'm happy cool. For you.
Also, I've had a couple of pints of cider, so I'm feeling kind of loose, you know?
We're going to get some controversial opinions.
How are you?
I am good. I would love to know what you've been reading since we last spoke.
Okay, so we only spoke like 3 days ago, but I have started a new book. I'm reading First Love.
By Gwendolyn Riley?
The very same.
How is it?
I am so far really enjoying it. It's quite an intense read, you know? So it's literary fiction about a really kind of a toxic marriage.
Yes.
And I'm reading it specifically because I read Acts of Desperation recently, and that's also about toxic relationships. So I was like, okay, let's roll with this theme.
Yeah.
And our good friend Jennifer Tighe is a big fan.
Yes.
Of Gwendolyn Riley. So I was like, okay, cool, let's try this out. And yeah, it's very intense, it's very short, it's very dark and sharp. And yeah, so far I'm really enjoying it.
I've been curious about it, but I've never read it. I thought it's either going to be really up my street or I'm going to find it really annoying. So I will await your judgment. If Benny likes it, then I'm probably down.
That's the thing. I think I was quite turned off by it because so many people said it's quite an exhausting read. Like, it's quite hard to read and it's quite kind of just irritating because everyone in it's so unlikable. So I was a bit turned off by it. But, you know, one has to have an open mind. And yeah. I'm now giving it a go and I'm having a good time.
I'm happy for you.
What are you reading?
Well, I'm reading a book that I am absolutely obsessed with, but weirdly, I have signed an NDA about it, so I can't tell you what this book is. Yes. Take it up with our friend Redacted. But
I can't believe that you have signed an NDA over a book that you're reading. I fucking love it.
I know, it's weird, isn't it? I've never done it before.
I've never heard of that before.
No, me either. But the book is banging, and I think the NDA lifts on the embargo ends on the 10th of May. So next week, I will tell you about this incredible book I'm reading. But I got my hair done today, and because I was getting color done, it takes ages, and the banging book that I signed an NDA about is enormous, and I didn't want to take that to the hairdressers with me. So I was reading a book on my Kindle. You know, I was talking about The Nothing Man by Katherine Ryan Howard.
Yes.
Well, on the Kindle there is also another book by her, so I thought I will read that because it's like a guaranteed good time. So I read 75% of The Liar's Girl by Katherine Ryan Howard, which is another banging thriller.
Ooh.
So now that we have covered our reading material for the week, should we move on to the little ep that we wanted to do today?
Yeah. Our little theme.
Hit me.
Okay, so I was thinking, let's talk about post-apocalyptic fiction. You know,
yes.
the end of the world, the old apocalypse.
Little cheeky apocalypse.
Yeah, and we're just going to, like, vibe. We don't have any specific, like, books in mind. Well, we've got a little list that we're going to kind of dip in and out of. But first of all, I just want to talk about what post-apocalyptic fiction actually is.
Please.
Because this is a bugbear of mine. I feel like, quite often, people confuse the term post-apocalyptic with dystopian. So, dystopia is the antonym of utopia, right? It means it's a novel that offers like an imagined future in which society exists, but it's in a more frightening form. So think like The Handmaid's Tale, 1984, Brave New World, Never Let Me Go, The Hunger Games, that kind of thing, right? In post-apocalyptic fiction, the apocalypse has happened, like the end of the world as we know it has occurred. And post-apocalyptic novels explore characters that are trying to survive or like form some kind of new society or community, like scratching around in like the devastated landscape post the destruction of the world, whether that's from like, you know, a man-made situation or a natural disaster or what have you. So that's the difference between the two, right?
Fascinating. I'd never really thought of that as like a distinction. Obviously I know intellectually that is the distinction, but I hadn't really, yeah, because I feel like I would have thought of this as like a dystopian episode, but it's kind of not. It is specifically a different thing.
Well, I guess like, I don't know if you could have, can you have a post-apocalyptic dystopian. I mean, you know, like if your work is set at a point where society has already been reformed, like that is complete.
Well, like, yeah, reformed by being reset rather than reformed by the kind of slow creep of politics. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. So I don't see why you can't have crossover. But, like, to me, I don't consider The Handmaid's Tale, 1984, these books that are quite classically dystopian.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
They're not, there has been no apocalypse. Like, for me, apocalypse means destruction of the planet. destruction of the structures that we currently have in place. And that doesn't, I guess, it doesn't necessarily mean it's a devastated landscape, but I just feel like that's, and we will get into this in a second, but it's a bit of a key trope to my mind.
Yeah, very interesting. So,
do you read much post-apocalyptic fiction?
No, not really. I mean, there's like a couple that are real faves, which I'm sure we will talk about, but namely Station 11 by Emily St. John Mandel and I Who Have Never Known Men by Jacqueline Hartman. But in general, it's not something I seek out. And if anything, I'm a little bit put off by it, I guess.
Why?
I don't know. I don't know at all. Because it's really interesting, but I feel like it's one of those things that I have to have it sold to me. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Like, I would never have sought out I Who Have Never Known Men off my own back, but because it was so recommended to me, I think by Beth, who does not listen to this podcast, yeah, that I ended up reading it and loved it.
I picked it up in foils because the cover caught my eye.
Yes.
So I, independently of, I believe Beth's wife, Laura, was the one who bought it.
Oh.
So, like, independently, we had both found this book. It was a reissue. I read it and absolutely loved it. And yeah, I mean, because I feel like I Who Have Never Known Men?
Yeah.
Yeah. I feel like that it does something very different. It operates in a very different way to a lot of the other post-apocalyptic novels that we have listed on our little shared note app. Yeah, it's quite different. But like, there's a lot of tropes that crop up quite frequently in post-apocalyptic fiction. And I think that's why I kind of need a bit of a gap between, I never like go on a post-apocalyptic kick, you know? I'm never like, fuck me, I can't get enough of this post-apocalyptic shit, I'm gonna shotgun six in a row. I feel like once I've read one, I feel sated for quite a while.
Yeah, I know what you mean. So talk us through some of the tropes.
So I'm just thinking, right, of the books that I have read, here are some things that pop to my mind that always exist, aside from devastated landscape. There's always, or frequently, there is a hint of cannibalism.
Just a touch of cannibalism.
Just like a light touch, a sprinkling of cannibalism. Whether it's from the main characters or if it's... It's generally actually something that other people do. And that's something which represents like the humanity that has been lost in other people that are surviving in like this devastated world. And that quite often the narrator or the main character, the protagonists, it's something they hold on to as like
a depth to which they have not sunk.
Yes, exactly. Which I also, I mean, not to like go off on one now about cannibalism, but I also think is quite interesting. Like, how much do you know about that plane crash that Alive is based on?
No, nothing.
Oh man. Okay, I'm going to make a recommendation to you. If thoughts of cannibalism have you intrigued, there's this YouTuber called Ask a Mortician, and her name's Caitlin Doherty, and she wrote Smoke Gets in Your Eyes.
Yes, I remember you mentioned this on a very early episode of this pod.
Oh, it's such a good book. But yeah, like, she has this YouTube channel and she does incredible in-depth videos about everything from contemporary funeral practices to like interesting historical stories that are to do with death or iconic corpses or what have you. She has this like 15-minute video on this plane crash, and it is so fucking interesting. And for them, like, they obviously, it's a rugby team. I forget exactly where they were from or where they crashed. God, my mind is just
degraded.
Ridiculous, yeah. But basically, they ended up, to survive, they had to eat their dad. And the telling of the story is really sad, but it's also really beautiful. And yeah, I just, this idea of like cannibalism for survival as the kind of a signifier of the lowest you can go, it's just really interesting to hear this real life story where that is not the way that it happened. You know, that was my cannibalism aside. The next one is pregnancy.
Yes.
It's one that I really hate, but yeah, pregnancy always crops up. It's this idea that, like, God forbid, this image that, like, the worst thing that could happen to a woman is to be pregnant and give birth without contemporary
modern medical
care.
Yeah.
Which, obviously, I mean, that it's my fucking worst nightmare. But, yeah, I just feel like if there's a woman, she's going to end up pregnant, and it does really annoy me.
Legit.
I'd love to encounter that trope, and it's someone who actually is not terrified, you know? Like, there is room there to explore a different idea of modern medicine and pregnancy, and... anyway, yeah. The next one is bad teeth, you know? Like, and maybe this sticks in my head because I'm quite dentophobic, but yeah, if there's a dude and he's got a toothache, that tooth is going to be removed at some point, probably with a fucking cork and a knife or whatever. Yeah, just like, and like, also like any kind of minor injury that becomes horrendous. So like, at least teeth is like quite straightforward. The other one is like a broken leg that you know is not going to heal. Yeah. And again, like, it's just that it kind of signifies that, like, the lack of structure, lack of modern medicine, also the lack of knowledge that if you don't have a doctor in your, or like a nurse or someone with a medical background in your midst, like, you're fucked. And then the others are like, if you have a post-apocalyptic novel with a group of people, there will be a struggle for leadership. Like, someone has to be captain. So there'll be like internal power battles. You'll also encounter like nomadic loners, or people who traverse the lands rather than staying put. Sometimes they represent a threat. Sometimes they don't. Like, the fact that they haven't settled into society is like a sign of like their lack of trust, but they can still be quite gentle. And then also, part of nomadic loners would also be raiders, like people who've banded together and
the baddies.
The bad guys. Like, their sole aim is to survive at any means necessary. They're not interested in collaboration or helping anyone else out. They're purely in it for themselves. And then finally, like, the whole kind of nature returning, you know, like the natural order of things, which can kind of lean into eco-fascism if you're not too careful. But like, this idea of, you know, everything that we have created, everything that humanity's created, is only temporary, and that without the kind of structures in place to keep things like buildings, transport, etc., without those structures to keep them running, nature will return, and that can be in the form of plant life, animals, birds, all that kind of shit. So that's
fascinating.
Like, and those were all off the top of my head because I was like, oh, I'll have a little look on, you know, TV tropes.
Yes,
I was like, I'll have a look on there, because even though it's, you know, that's more about film and television, like, it's all kind of the same shit. And oh my god, when did you last look at TV tropes?
Not recently, I don't think.
I feel like you need a PhD in TV tropes to read a single sentence on there, because everything they refer to, every single thing, is like links to a separate page. So they refer to tropes by the title that the trope has on TV tropes.
Yes, I know exactly what you mean. Yeah.
Do you know
what
I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just like hard work, man. So anyway, that's my list.
Wow. That's a very comprehensive list. I feel like you are much more, you're definitely much more in tune with this as a genre than I am. Although I do really love the two that I mentioned before.
I think I just got vibing and then I started rolling with it.
I love it when you vibe and I love it when you roll.
Okay, so let's think about some of the novels that we have read that we've really enjoyed that are post-apocalyptic.
So last year, at the beginning of the first lockdown, when the... Ooh, the thunder and lightning!
What? Is it raining?
There's definitely thunder going on in my neighbourhood.
I hope that you don't cut that out.
My husband is out currently. I hope he doesn't get really rained on, because that would be sad.
I'm assuming that he's going to immediately think apocalypse is coming. He's going to become a nomadic wanderer, entertaining people by stopping by and performing his shows. His one-man shows for scraps. That's Lil Paolo in the apocalypse.
Well, I feel like he would be really good at that.
I think he would. People would love him.
So, at the beginning of the first lockdown last year, when coronavirus was, like, much, much, much more unknown and kind of, in a way, scarier than it feels now, where we've been living with it for, you know, more than a year, I decided to prepare myself for the eventuality that the world was actually going to end by reading, or rather getting on audiobook, Station 11 by Emily St. John Mandel.
So good.
Yeah, I just thought, I'm going to kill two birds with one stone. I'm going to listen to a book that I know is banging and that I know I'm going to enjoy, but also that may give me some insights into human life.
I did it.
Yes.
Yes.
Well, I mean, I really enjoyed it. I was really, really happy to go back there.
So,
because it is a true... Sorry. It was definitely a reread. I'd read it at least once before. And for me, it's a real, like... And I'm sure for a lot of people, it's a proper, like, modern classic, a 21st century classic.
It really is, man. I remember, I probably said this on the pod before, but it was a book of the month when I was a Waterstones bookseller. And it was one of those books that you really could recommend to basically anyone. Like, it's so interesting. It's so well written. It's such a satisfying read as well. It's one of those books where everything falls into place, you know, like really neatly.
Yeah.
But you can't possibly predict where it's going to go. In my opinion, anyway. Maybe I didn't read it that closely. And some, like, eagle-eyed reader felt that they could have predicted it, but I couldn't. I felt like it was a real surprise.
Yeah, it's the most elegant book. It's so moving and thought-provoking and multi-layered and satisfying. I just feel like it's a real proper masterpiece. And, yeah, it definitely felt like a good time to be revisiting it.
And, yeah, it definitely enjoyed a bit of a boost at the start of the pandemic, because Station 11, that's the other thing, is that with post-apocalyptic novels, as I mentioned, like, the thing that causes the breakdown of society, like, can be anything. Station 11 happens to be a virus.
Yes.
Which, I know that some people felt like that was the last thing they wanted to read. I totally understood that, like, desire to, like, revisit that book, because it's almost comforting to read, to think, like, well, this isn't going to happen. Realistically, this isn't going to happen. It's not going to be Station 11. We're not going to be forming fucking traveling theatres to entertain, do you know what I mean? To entertain people to make our way. Like, it's not going to be that bad.
Only my husband, when he is out doing the food shopping.
I feel like it's Paul's natural instinct to entertain, though, so...
Yeah, he doesn't need to be asked twice. He doesn't need the excuse of the literal apocalypse to become a wandering, travelling performer.
A one-man show.
Yeah.
Takes the nation by storm.
Tell me about one you like that I haven't read.
Okay, so I don't know if we've ever talked about The Road.
Well, I haven't read it, so probably not.
Have you seen the movie?
No, because it looked too depressing. Or maybe I did see the movie and I found it too depressing and I erased it from my memory.
I will say, right, so I can't really remember. The only memory I have of the film is that I saw it at the cinema in Manchester with my pal Steve. And someone, as soon as the film started, like, it's a very kind of, it's quite a quiet, in the literal sense, it's quite a quiet movie. Like, there's only, you know, two characters in most scenes. It's a man and his son. And they're traveling on this road to try and get to the coast. And I just remember that this really quiet opening, and this guy in front of us started eating an apple. It's like, that's a ridiculous cinema snack, right? Like, that's ridiculous. And Steve just leant forward and tapped him and just went, oh, come on. And to his credit, he put that apple away.
Quite right.
But yeah, also, like, as books go, like, it's really, really dark. I think it ticks off basically every trope that I mentioned earlier. And it is incredibly sad. I remember finishing it in bed alone at, like, midnight at my mom's house and just lying there crying my fucking eyes out.
Yeah, I don't want that.
But it's weird, because I don't think, like, it's not a book that people necessarily talk about in terms of that, like, bone-aching sadness. But I found it really sad. I also, personally, I thought the ending was quite clear. But it turns out that it's something that people disagree on, whether it's, like, an optimistic ending or a pessimistic ending.
This is like the ending of The Sopranos, which I thought was a clear ending, because I did not see there was any subtext to it.
Oh. And I haven't seen The Sopranos, so I have no idea what you're talking about. But
to me, the ending of The Sopranos is some people having a nice dinner. Oh. That's it. That's all that happens at the end. So I feel like it may be a similar situation with The Road. Okay. Yeah, I just feel like it's one of those books that I should read and I'd probably get something out of it. But I'm always like, I have it with various media items where I've just decided that like it's too depressing and I don't want to deal with it. But I recently faced one of those fears, which was the Shane Meadows film, This Is England. I watched it at the weekend and I did feel very depressed by it, but I also enjoyed it. So maybe I should face more of my media fears and read The Road.
Thing is with The Road, right, it's just 95%. And I will just caveat, I read it quite a long time ago, so, you know, I guess take this with a pinch of salt. But I remember it being 95% banger, 5% incredible sadness. Yeah. And that 5% is literally the last, like, 5 pages. So you're basically going to have a great time and then you'll know why it's going to be sad, because what the sadness is very apparent.
Well, okay. There's room for me there.
I recommend it. I think you'll like it. I don't think it's anywhere near as satisfying as Station 11. It's not crafted in the same way.
Yeah.
But yeah, I still think it's a rollicking good time.
I feel like you're probably the only person that's ever described it that way.
I'm happy to hold that title. Have you read Severance yet?
No, because that's another one that I know I need to read. And I feel like Beth is very into dystopian fiction. I feel like we should have got her on the pod.
Here's the thing, right? The reason why Beth is really into dystopian fiction, post-apocalyptic fiction.
Oh, yeah, sorry.
Because I feel like she's the kind of gal that, like, if there's a problem in your home, Beth will fix it. Like, she can fucking skin her own meat. She's the kind of person that I would not be surprised if we went camping and she could set up, like, a bear trap. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
like, she's
very practical,
hands-on. I think she reads post-apocalyptic fiction as a way of preparing herself for whatever could happen.
Yeah, or maybe she, like, secretly would quite enjoy the apocalypse because it means she gets to, like, test out her skills.
She's literally, like, one post-apocalyptic novel off becoming a prepper.
Yep.
Do you know what I mean? So true. Like, water purifying tablets always in the handbag. Spork on the ready.
Gotta have a spork. So, yeah, Severance is one of the other books that she has recommended many times, and I have not read, but I have been meaning to. Like, I would say it's the number one book that I would like to read that I have not read.
So I feel like I did really enjoy it. One of the things that I really liked about it was that the thing that happens, it's also a virus, and it's very weird. I've said this before on the pod, but it's very weird that this book was not written post-COVID. It was written pre-COVID. And, like, obviously that sounds kind of dumb because COVID is not the first virus that has affected people around the world. But yeah, it feels like very eerily. Some parts of it feel like a very eerie echo of what's to come. Although, of course, it's post-apocalyptic, so what happens in the world of Severance is much more severe than what happened to us over the last year and a half.
Interesting.
Yeah, I really enjoyed it for that reason. I really recommend it. I think it's a really good book. It's a good read.
I will definitely get around to it. Do you have a paper copy?
I do. I have a really nice American edition, which is all floppy and millennial pink. And it was a gift from Beth.
Well, then I will not borrow it from you because I don't want to abuse your nice floppy American book.
You can read it. I don't care.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Okay, so we've already talked about I Who Have Never Known Men. But just to circle back around to it, one of the reasons that I really like that book is that they don't make any effort whatsoever to explain what has happened. Like,
yes,
the book opens, there's a young, she's like quite young, right? Is she like 13 or 14?
I can't remember exactly how old, but yeah, definitely young.
A young teenager who has only ever known the cage in which she is in with 39 other women. And that's it.
They live in an underground, it's not clear what they're living in, but they are living in an underground bunker. And that's kind of their life. That's it.
And I just like that. I like the boldness of it. Like, it's more of a novella than a novel. It's very short.
Yeah.
And it doesn't trouble itself to answer your questions.
Yeah, I mean, I was reading it kind of expecting it to be revealed, but when it wasn't, I was not mad about it because it's that good in every other way.
Yeah, I suppose it's not a spoiler to say that you don't find out, is it?
No, in a way, I think it's probably better if you go in knowing that that's not why you're reading it.
Yeah. Because I guess the whole point is this woman, this child, she's too young to have any memories other than this space. So there is no one to tell her exactly what happened.
So true. Yep, that bangs. I would definitely recommend that. And maybe I'll reread it sometime because it is nice and short.
Yeah, I'll come. I'll definitely revisit. I feel like I'll revisit all of these at one point or another.
Yes.
Not quite. There's one on the list I didn't like, and we will get to it. But the next one I was going to mention is a graphic novel series called Why the Last Man.
Yes, I saw this on your little list, and I was like, I have literally no idea.
Have you never what heard that of is. It?
No, tell me about it.
So let me tell you about it. I actually have complete. Okay, so it's written by Brian K. Vaughan and Pia Guerra.
Mm-hmm.
Brian K. Vaughan, I have to quickly look up what else he wrote because I've forgotten. Oh, he wrote Paper Girls, Ex Machina, Saga. Do any of those ring a bell?
No.
So he's like quite, he is quite the name in the like sci-fi superhero comic space. Why the Last Man is a self-contained series of like 8 volumes, I think. And basically, as the title suggests, it's set in a world in which all but one man dies in a mysterious plague. So I feel like this is something that gets, I've seen repeated in other stuff, but this was the first time I came across this concept. So the whole world is run by women. There's just this one dude, and the series is about this guy trying to find his girlfriend.
Fascinating.
It's just him and his pet monkey. And it's really good. I really liked it when I read it. It also moved me to tears. I found it really, really emotive. I really liked it.
Well, for something I've never heard of, I think it sounds banging.
Yeah. Would you ever read a graphic novel series, though? Is that your bag at all?
I would read a graphic novel. I may not read a graphic novel series, but if I read one and I liked it, I would read the series.
I think at the minute I've lent my entire collection of Why the Last Man to my brother-in-law, but I'll get them back at some point, and maybe you'll try one out, or maybe I'll reread them first and decide if I think you'll like them.
Screen them for me.
Yeah, I can't be having you take away something that's subpar and then spoiling your relationship with graphic novel series forever.
So true.
That would be a terrible weight to carry around my neck. And then, yeah, thinking about Why the Last Man, I was like, is the power dystopian or post-apocalyptic?
I would say definitely dystopian. Given the parameters that you have set out, it's purely dystopian.
Yeah,
because
the structures don't crumble, they're just... the leaders are replaced.
Yeah, it's more a Handmaid's Tale kind of political sliding due to some kind of biological change.
Yeah, okay, I'm satisfied with that.
That's my answer.
Although while we're here, did you like The Power? Did you read it?
Yep, I really liked it. Yep, I'm a fan.
Yeah, I thought it banged.
Me too. And I will definitely watch the TV series, which
is a TV series.
Yes.
Oh.
I knew that it was happening anyway, and then it was being filmed in one of my local parks a couple of months ago.
That's
which is very random.
Okay.
Yes.
All right, good. So have you read the last?
No, I have not. Have you?
Okay, yes, I have. I read it by 2019. It's by a woman called Hannah Jameson.
Yes.
And basically, okay, I'm going to describe it to you and you're going to think that sounds fucking wicked. But I did not think it was fucking wicked. So basically, it's a post-apocalyptic novel crossed with like an Agatha Christie whodunit.
Is this the one that's set in a hotel?
Yeah. So it's a post. It's the apocalypse has happened. There's a bunch of people are in like a hotel. It's like a ski resort thing, and they're trapped there. And then someone turns up dead, or like that someone's dead. Someone's dead, and they're left wondering who amongst them is a murderer. And it sounds really good, but it is so long.
Mm.
And like it's very compelling. Like I did speed through it, and I'm sure lots of people listening probably loved it, but I just found it was very long. I was really frustrated by the voice. The main character, the narrator, is like a middle-aged white dude, and yeah, I just didn't end up loving it as much as I hoped I would.
Damn. Well, you know, we can't like them all.
You win some, you lose some, but I feel like 400 pages is too much for me to lose instead of win.
Yes. Yes,
that's
I agree.
That's my vibe. Also, it ticked off pretty much every trope I mentioned earlier. And, like, tropes are not the same as cliches, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like, not necessarily, but just, yeah. As soon as there was a fucking two character shagging, I was like, yeah, we're going to have a pregnancy plot line. Isn't pregnancy terrifying? The monstrous female body. Like, I just kind of peaced out. So that's that one. And then, oh yeah, the other thing I added to this list was the Carmen Maria Machado story, Inventory.
Yes. Yes, yes, yes. Yes. Yeah, is that the one about, like, a relationship? Is that the relationship one?
Yeah, sort of. She is reminiscing about everyone she slept with.
Yes, that's it, yep.
And then you slowly realise that she is alone because of, like, a post-apocalyptic thing has occurred. But I loved that story. I think it was my favourite in the collection. Or the collection being Her Body and Other Parties. But yeah, I think it was my favourite. And I was like, that's actually a really cool example of something a little bit different that I really loved.
Yeah, I remember really liking that one as well. Yes, an interesting little addition to this genre.
So that's the that's basically a list of everything that I could think of that I'd read. There are a few others that have come out in recent years, and I'm half wondering if we will see, like, a big crop of them come up, kind of like our COVID babies, you know? Like a crop of novels written during the pandemic that have been inspired by what felt like our you know, our potential apocalypse.
I wonder if I feel like it's just as likely that there won't be anything like it for a while, because it won't be imagination anymore. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
We'll be reading this stuff with a more, like, critical eye of what it actually could feel like. Do you know what? I don't know. I really don't know.
I mean, I suspect that lots of people will have written them. But I guess the thing with receiving... The thing if you're writing something which lots of other people are working on, like, for your book to break through, you have to have done something very cool. Like, it has to be really, really well written. Or have a strong, like, literary or page-turner energy. You basically, you have to have a banger, you know?
Yes.
I'm excited to see, though, just because I feel like we've all been fucking talking about pandemic novels for so long. I just almost want it to just happen. I want to see them coming. I want it to happen.
Yeah, I'm very curious as to what impact the pandemic has on this kind of story. Very interested.
Me too. And then, just as a side note, how do you feel about dystopia? Are you more interested in dystopia than post-apocalyptic?
Yes, I'm much more interested in dystopia than post-apocalyptic, partly because I think I prefer the idea that, like, anything could happen in the dystopian story, whereas in the post, maybe it's because of the presence of the tropes that you mentioned. I feel like there is a slightly narrower field of things I'm going to be reading, whereas with dystopian stories, that opens it up to almost literally anything. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, definitely. Well, yes and no, because I feel like dystopian fiction also has a set of tropes. But then I suppose, I mean, out of the list that I chucked out earlier, like The Handmaid's Tale, 1984, Brave New World, I feel like they all have quite a few similar tropes going on, whereas Never Let Me Go is quite the outlier.
Yeah, which is my favourite. That's my favourite dystopian novel, unsurprisingly. Never Let Me Go by my boy, Katsuo Ishiguro. Yeah, I feel like that is something I am interested in. I think I'm just interested in something that, like, tests the limit of humanity, and that can be found in a post-apocalyptic novel as well. So I feel like that is a kind of thing that I'm interested in, is like what makes people, or what makes things human, or what makes people human, what is human behavior, what do we not perceive as human. That's the thing I am quite interested in. So that maybe figures why I would be more inclined towards dystopian fiction, because that's a question that I feel it does sometimes deal with.
But I think also that, I mean, so just kind of riffing, but post-apocalyptic fiction by definition is exploring what humanity is with no structure in place.
Yes.
Whereas dystopian fiction is exploring what humanity is with too much structure in place.
Or quite a specific example of a structure. Yes.
I think that both post-apocalyptic fiction and dystopian fiction, it's very difficult to write about them without also writing about justice in one form or another. Inequality is quite often a theme of both.
Yes.
And yet, having said that, I'm just looking. I think apart from Severance and Inventory, the vast majority of the work we've discussed is by white people.
Yeah, I was going to say that, but then I was like, I don't have anything to offer as a counterpoint because I don't read enough.
Well, I guess it's more like a point to flag. Like, if equality, justice tend to be like themes, specifically, I'd say more in dystopia than post-apocalyptic novels, but, you know, are we missing something? Is there something famous that I've just completely glossed over? Or is it just that these kinds of books only tend to be published by, you know, like white dudes? Because most of these are written by, oh no, actually, probably about 50-50 men and women in the list that we have.
And Ling Ma is a woman of colour.
Yes, exactly.
Who wrote Severance. Yeah. Yeah. Interesting. Yeah.
Interesting. So please, if you're listening at home, I hope you're still listening, if you haven't zoned out, if you can think of any post-apocalyptic or dystopian work, particularly by black writers, I'd be really interested. Anything that comes recommended. Obviously, I'll do my own Google. But yeah, I'd love to know if there's anything like really key that I just didn't know about.
That our friends at home enjoy.
All right, on that note.
I'm concerned about the whereabouts of my husband, who I think is stuck in the rainstorm somewhere. So, maybe he is beginning his career as a wandering performer of his one-man show.
He's gone feral. He's just cut his losses. He's like,
he ain't coming back. Yeah,
he's like, Bethany will be fine. She's very pragmatic. She'll be gorge. She's safe in the flat.
He knows I have one sachet of Pop-Tarts, and that will enable me to survive at least one day.
Well, that's like the first bargaining chip, you know, like in a post-apocalyptic. Where are you again? Forest Hill.
Yeah.
Pop-Tarts will be the only currency of note. So
that sounds like sometimes when I can't think of anything to write, I'll go on like a story generator website and see if it, by some miracle, give me an idea. And that's exactly the kind of shit that it gives me.
Okay,
and
right.
I end up having to come up with my own stories.
Can I tell you something hilarious then, right? At uni, I remember a writer, we were talking about like how sometimes you might have an idea for what something that needs to happen, right, but you don't know what scene, like where to fix this conversation, like how to actually have a conversation in fiction. And you quite often will end up defaulting to characters being at the pub or smoking cigarettes, or like we all have like our kind of like default things, like scenes in which things happen. And this dude was like, just go onto WikiHow, and he was like, you'll find an activity. Like, it will throw up an activity. Just commit. Whatever activity is thrown up, just commit to writing a scene based on that activity. And it will really help you to practice writing more, like, unusual, you know, like, scenarios. So I fucking go onto WikiHow, really prepared to be open-minded. Like, I'm going to really, whether it's, like, fixing a motorbike, whether it's, like, fight, you know, setting a bear trap. And I got how to eat a grilled cheese sandwich. it became the basis of my short story, How to Eat a Grilled Cheese Sandwich, which Three of Cups published. But yeah, fucking how? Who needs a WikiHow on how to eat a grilled cheese sandwich?
Like, certainly not me.
Born to do that.
I did it only today.
Did you now? Well, there you go.
Yeah, I did.
I bet you wrote the fucking WikiHow.
Well, I'm going to return to my dystopian flood landscape, and we will see you next time.
I can't wait. Bye.